rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Bradfold, Judge Bryant, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes Jr. presiding.
How do they do this?
Come over here.
So much for 6 feet of distance.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. Thank you all for making the effort to be here. We know that this case is a bit more complicated than the usual case. So as a result, we have indicated to both parties that you will have 20 minutes rather than 15 minutes for initial arguments. Appellant, you will still have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. I understand that for respondents, you will be splitting time.
Yes, sir.
And for respondent Biosar, how much time will you be taking?
15 minutes, sir.
15 minutes, and then 5 minutes for Fading Technologies. Okay, thank you. Okay, and then, so just to begin, the first case is A19-1639, Faith Technologies et al. Versus Aurora Distributed Solar LLC. When the parties approach the podium, there's a button on the bottom that you can adjust it up or down. And just to be clear, there's only going to be one person for Aurora that will be making arguments.
Right.
Okay. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. And counsel for appellants, you may proceed. Should be right underneath.
There you go.
Judge,
you got the
right button. Judge Reyes, are you on mute?
Can you hear me? Is that better? There we go. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Thank you, Judge Bradfold. Yes, we can. You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Bruce Jones, representing appellant Aurora Distributed Solar. I first want to thank the court for accommodating oral argument in this case under the unusual circumstances we all find ourselves in nowadays. My client and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with the court about this case.
And before you proceed, counsel, I did want to make note, there's one thing I should note as well. We do have a three-judge panel. Judge Bryan is the third judge. He will be listening to the oral arguments before we conference, but he will. That's how he will be participating.
Understood, Your Honor. Thank you. We are here today because Aurora did not receive the arbitration that it contracted for. In negotiating their lengthy and complex construction contract, Aurora and Biosar agreed that if any party wanted legal relief in the form of damages under the contract, they would arbitrate before an arbitrator who had deep knowledge of construction issues and could interpret and apply the contract. They also agreed, however, that if they wanted something else, some kind of non-monetary or equitable relief, then they had to go to court with all the additional safeguards inherent in the judicial system. Here, after the project went wrong, as you read in the briefs, the parties agreed to arbitrate. But the arbitrator agreed to apply and interpret the contract. The arbitrator, however, decided it would simply be too hard to apply the contract, so he abandoned it entirely and created his own equitable and non-monetary remedy. This non-monetary equitable remedy exceeded his authority under the contract. In fact, it violated an express bar on such remedies. Because it exceeded its authority, because the arbitrator exceeded his authority, Aurora is entitled to have the award vacated and the case remanded to a new arbitration doing what the first arbitrator was supposed to do but failed to do. In arguing against vacation of the arbitration award, respondents try to retroactively justify the arbitrator's violation of his duties by claiming that Aurora somehow gave up its right to enforce that bar on equitable and non-monetary relief.
So, counsel, are you talking about the waiver argument?
I'm talking about two arguments. First of all, they argue that the stipulation that brought faith into the ongoing arbitration between Aurora and Biosar somehow superseded the Section 14 of the EPC contract between Aurora and Biosar, despite the fact that the arbitrator found that it didn't and still enforced and applied the EPC Section 14.
Well, the stipulation and order certainly had much broader language in there. In terms of the stipulation order certainly had much broader language in there saying that the arbitrator can decide any and all issues and claims.
It did, but the arbitrator found, as the arbitration agreement directed him to, he defined the scope of the arbitration agreement and what disputes came under it. He decided that the arbitration agreement in the EPC contract, Article 14, applied to the dispute between Biosar and Aurora, just as he decided that the stipulation governed the dispute between Aurora and Faith.
Right, but the arbitrator also said that the stipulation order was part of his authority as well.
He said it was part, on page 5 or 6 of the, 5 and 6 of the partial final award, he went down and listed the source of his authority over each of the disputes. As to the Aurora-Biosar dispute, he cited the arbitration agreement in the EPC contract only. As to the Biosar-Faith dispute, he cited the arbitration clause in their subcontract. And as to the Aurora-Faith dispute, he cited the stipulation.
Right, but you still had all three parties signing and agreeing to the stipulation and order, which gave broad authority to the arbitrator to decide all issues and all claims. And in particular, I'd like to focus on the waiver argument.
Yes.
Why isn't it that Aurora didn't waive its argument, particularly with respect to the abandonment issue?
Well, to waive an argument, you have to be there has to be knowledge that you are voluntarily relinquishing a known right.
Right, and that seems to be pretty obvious from Aurora clearly disputed the abandonment argument throughout the entire arbitration.
There was no abandonment argument. The respondents try very hard retroactively to make it appear that there was, but there was no claim. Biosar never sought abandonment of the argument, of the contract.
It seems like Biosar put Aurora on notice right away that was an issue through the arbitration.
You're referring to some item in particular? Biosar's original request for arbitration did not mention abandonment. In a list of claims filed shortly after the arbitration began, they did list abandonment as a possible issue, but they never pursued it. At the arbitration, in the entire arbitration, Biosar never asked the arbitrator to abandon the EPC contract. Biosar always sought contract-based damages, relief under the contract, just as the arbitration agreement contemplated. The final request that the Biosar made of the arbitrator was to award two things. Number one, payment of Biosar's change orders under the contract. And number two, electrical cost overruns from Aurora, where Biosar claimed that Aurora had taken over the electrical scope of the contract, of the subcontract with Faith. This was purely monetary, purely contract-based damages. Indeed, Biosar's final argument, which we quote in our reply brief, stated, Biosar agrees with Aurora that the contract should be enforced, but that means the entire contract. It also means enforcing and interpreting the contract in the context of the facts and the evidence. There was no assertion in the arbitration by Biosar that the contract had been completely rescinded or should be completely rescinded.
Well, rescission is a different issue than abandonment, though.
Well, the arbitrator equated the two.
The arbitrator made it very, very clear that the arbitrator found the contract to be abandoned.
And he said abandoned, rescinded in the same breath. There are several points in our brief where we point out that he used the two terms interchangeably, as does Minnesota law.
Red counsel, is that the arbitrator definitely cites case law discussing the relationship between abandonment and rescission. I do not see a finding in the arbitrator's decision that the parties in this case rescinded So if you have that, it would help our analysis of the case to see that very specific finding. And it was challenged in the briefs.
Well, he used the word abandoned, but it doesn't really mean... Yeah, he used the word
abandoned. It's the rescission part. You're equating the two, and you have reasons for it based on law, Minnesota law. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily follow that the two are together, abandonment and rescission.
I submit the case law says they are, but even if they're not, abandonment is likewise equitable non-monetary relief that is barred under the arbitration clause.
Whether now, though, I think I agree with you, but the issue that I think we're on is whether Aurora waived its right to limit the damages to this, as stated in the EPC, or whether it, with notice, went ahead with arbitration of the abandonment claim that BioSAR asserted. And based on the notice that BioSAR gave, notice of issues, it seems to me there was full notice by Aurora that abandonment was going to be the issue.
But it was never pursued at the arbitration itself. It was listed, as you list a 40 affirmative defenses in an answer to a civil complaint, only a few of which ever become at issue. There would be no claim on an appeal that an affirmative defense that was never asserted in the course of litigation, other than being in the complaint, somehow resulted in a waiver of that when it wasn't tried as part of the case. That's what we have here. You have this initial notice in a list of possible claims, but it was never pursued. As I said, at the arbitration, BioSAR sought monetary relief based on the contract damages. It never asked the court to hold that the contract had been abandoned or to release it from its obligations on that basis. There's no way Aurora could have known and objected to that form of equitable relief when it was never requested.
The argument I see raised by the other side, and maybe I misunderstand it, so help me if I'm wrong, is that the abandonment issue was not to say that the contract no longer existed or was rescinded, but that in fact the certain duties had been assumed by Aurora, and that the party, and that's the finding that I see in the arbitrator's decision as well, that Aurora had now stepped in the shoes of BioSAR. And so that was the change, not a rescission of the contract. So that's why BioSAR argues they went ahead and sought protection under the portions of the contract that were not abandoned.
I understand. The problem is when you talk about the shift of contractual duties, they're still contractual duties. They're still seeking relief under the terms of the contract. There is no request here that the contract be, that the arbitrator find the contract was completely abandoned, which is what he did. We couldn't have waived our right to object to the arbitrator holding the contract was abandoned when nobody had ever asked the arbitrator to hold that the contract was abandoned. I also point out that in the context of waiver, as the case law that we've cited and the case law that BioSAR has cited both make clear, simply failing to object is not enough to waive this kind of provision in an arbitration agreement. Both name of the case slipped my mind momentarily, but the Wells Fargo case that both parties cite makes clear that it is not enough simply to not to object. You also have to have the party against whom the waiver is being sought itself seeking the forbidden relief. In the Wells Fargo case, defendants waived their right to enforce the contractual prescription on injunctive relief by failing to challenge Wells Fargo's request for such relief and by requesting it themselves. The court specifically said this failure to object alone may not have been enough to abrogate the prohibition on injunctive relief in the party's agreement, but appellants affirmatively requested injunctive relief on two separate instances later in the proceedings. That is the second element that is missing here, that respondents do not even suggest that Aurora itself.
Is there a Minnesota case law that you can cite, and perhaps it was cited in Wells Fargo, that reflects that waiver requires not only a knowing and voluntary relinquishment of a right, but also the affirmative assertion of the right? I mean, I understand your point from the Wells Fargo case. I'm just struggling to see that thread coming out of Minnesota law. Yes, there isn't as much older case as it is cited in Wells Fargo.
I don't think there's been a Minnesota case that has directed that on point under the Federal Arbitration Act. There is the Minnesota case, which I will refer you to in just a moment here, that addressed the issue under the Minnesota statute, interpreting Minnesota statutory language. And the Seagate case, 854 Northwest 2nd 750, while not directly on point, it does address this issue, and it does talk about the policy reasons for having this additional requirement in the arbitration context, because of the informality of arbitration proceedings requiring a higher threshold for a finding of waiver is considered as a matter of policy a better way to go than simply allowing than the lower bar that that BioSAR here is urging.
But the Wells Fargo case, well, first of all, I'm not so sure it can be read as broadly based on the particular facts of that case, but even so, the Wells Fargo case is an FAA case. It's not a JAMS case. And to the extent that there's any conflict between JAMS and FAA, JAMS overrules the FAA.
But the... Right. But I'm not aware of any difference. And again, your Honor raises a point that I haven't specifically looked at, but I don't know of any reason that the policy would be any different. I mean, that the same issues arise, the same threshold informality concerns that the Minnesota Supreme Court mentioned in Seagate would apply here.
Well, under JAMS, all you have to do is knowingly waive your right. There's no incorporation of the Wells Fargo second element under JAMS. That's the key difference there.
Okay. The arbitration provision here specifically says that the JAMS rules apply except when they are in conflict with the terms of the arbitration agreement, the terms of the EPC contract itself. And the EPC contract itself has a non-waiver clause in it, which requires that any waiver has to be in a particular form, and there's no claim here that was done. And if you don't have that form, it's not in writing, then it's not effective. BioSAR has never addressed this non-waiver clause, either in the trial court or here, or explained why it shouldn't be enforced in the context even of the JAMS rules that Your Honor is mentioning.
But even so, you've got the stipulation and order, which contains much, much broader language governing all claims, including waiver claims, between the parties.
That's a separate question. I mean, the question of waiver, if we want to go back to the stipulation, that's the threshold issue that the trial court, we believe, got wrong. The arbitration agreement specifically granted the arbitrator the power and the authority and the duty, in fact, to determine what claims came within what arbitration agreements, and he did that. He said the arbitration agreement governing the dispute between Aurora and BioSAR appears in Article 14 of the EPC contract, the arbitration clause. The district court disregarded that finding and cited no authority whatever.
I don't think the district court disregarded that finding. The district court affirmed the arbitrator's decision, and I think you seem to be proceeding on the assumption that it's an either or between the stipulation order and the EPC contract. But I don't think that either the arbitrator or the district court took that approach. To the extent that there are inconsistencies, the stipulation and order would overrule the EPC contract, and the stipulation order is broader. But I don't think that the two are necessarily in direct conflict, and it's either one or the other.
I disagree, Your Honor. The contract itself specifically delegated to the arbitrator the authority to make that decision. It says the arbitrator, it's in Section 14.2 of the arbitration agreement, the arbitrator shall determine all questions of fact and law relating to any dispute hereunder, including whether or not any dispute is subject to the arbitration provisions contained herein. The arbitrator then made a finding which said the arbitration between BioSAR getting too fast here. The arbitration agreement between BioSAR and Aurora is included in Article 14 of the EPC contract. Notwithstanding that, the district court specifically overruled that finding, recognizing it as a finding. He said the party this is the district court now. The party's stipulation and proposed order supplanted the EPC's arbitration provision and as a result governed the scope of the arbitrator's powers, regardless of the arbitrator's finding that his authority was derived from the EPC contract. The district court consciously overruled the arbitrator's finding of the source of his authority over the BioSAR.
I'm not so sure I read the district court's order the same. I think the district court is just saying that because the stipulation and order is so broad, that controls over the specific limitations that are in the EPC agreement.
But the point is the contract delegated the power to make that determination to the arbitrator, and the arbitrator made that. The arbitrator relied on, and this is not simply
right,
theoretical.
Right, but the district court never, where did the district court say we are overruling the arbitrator's decision? I don't see that anywhere in the district court decision at all.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that what I just read to you does that. It said the stipulation supplanted the EPC's arbitration provision. Supplanted, replaced, overruled.
Well, that just explains the relationship between the stipulation order and the EPC. That says nothing about what the arbitrator decided. The district court never said, if you can point me to the language where the district court says, arbitrator got it wrong. We are expressly overruling the arbitrator's decision on this particular point. I don't see any language in the district court's order that says that at all. The district court, in fact, takes the opposite approach and basically is affirming the arbitrator's decision, isn't it?
I'd submit that the next part of that sentence, regardless of the arbitrator's finding that his authority was derived from the EPC contract, is a recognition that this court is substituting its judgment that the stipulation, rather than the EPC contract, as the arbitrator found, controls here. I see my time is up. I look forward to talking to you again.
Even with 20 minutes, it goes fast, doesn't it, counsel?
It does. Thank you.
Counsel for respondent BioSAR, you have 15 minutes. May I proceed, counsel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, Judge Bryan. My name is Jevin Binman. I represent BioSAR America, LLC, respondent in this appeal. Faith, Aurora, and BioSAR agree that all claims, counterclaims, and defenses by, between, and among Faith, Aurora, and BioSAR arising out of and related to the project shall be submitted to binding resolution by the arbitrator in the consolidated arbitration. This is the language from the stipulation and order that was agreed to by BioSAR, Aurora, and Faith, that was memorialized into a stipulation that was signed by the district court. And because of this stipulation, this is a simple case. The parties agreed to arbitrate all claims and defenses. And that's where this case ends. Now, this was not the first arbitration agreement the parties entered into. In their EPC contract, BioSAR and Aurora agreed to an arbitration provision in Section 14 of that contract. But then after the dispute arose, and not only BioSAR and Aurora were involved in that dispute, but Faith and dozens of other parties, the BioSAR, Aurora, and Faith agreed that rather than follow the more strict requirements of the EPC contract with regard to arbitration, that they would stipulate to submit all claims and defenses to the arbitrator. And that's what they did. The district court did exactly what the district court has been told to do in these cases. The district court has been told by the Supreme Court that arbitration is a favored remedy and that the court should defer to that resolution. The court entered the stipulation in order and allowed the three parties to resolve their disputes by arbitration. Now, Aurora, at this point, is arguing that because the arbitrator identified the incorrect source of his authority in the partial final award, that that somehow means that his authority was curtailed. Well, first of all, this is simply wrong. As BioSAR and Faith argue in their briefs, on page, 132 to 133 of BioSAR's addendum, the arbitrator specifically noted the stipulation as a source of authority. But even if he didn't, there's no requirement for the arbitrator to identify his source of authority in any particular place or in any particular way. The question is, did the arbitrator have that authority? And the answer, if you just from a cursory glance at the stipulation, is yes. Now, Aurora also invents this conflict between the district court order and the arbitrator's award, finding that the district court overruled the arbitrator's source of authority. And again, a cursory look at the district court orders shows that this is incorrect. Both the district court and the arbitrator cited the stipulation as the source of the arbitrator's authority. Both the district court and the arbitrator found the all of the claims decided by the arbitrator, that those claims were arbitrable.
So what about the language that was cited by appellant's counsel on number five, that the scope of the arbitrator's, regarding the scope of the arbitrator's power, saying regardless of the arbitrator's finding that his authority was derived from the EPC contract? Doesn't that create an either-or that, no, your authority does not come from the EPC contract, particularly the arbitration clause, but rather from the stipulation or proposed order?
Well, that language from the district court is not in conflict with what the arbitrator found.
Why not?
Well, because the arbitrator also found that the arbitrator has several sources of authority here. The EPC contract certainly governs parts of the arbitration, but the parties also specifically stipulated to a broader source of authority for the arbitrator. Now, the district court is citing to the exact same source, the stipulation, and there's no way that those two conclusions can be in conflict if they're citing the same source and that they are determining that the arbitrator has the same source of authority.
I have another question following up. Is with respect to the issue of waiver, and under the EPC, it requires any waiver to be in writing. Why isn't that controlling?
Well, I'll preface my answer by stating the obvious, that if the stipulation applies to the arbitrator's source of authority, then we don't even have to get to waiver. Then the arbitrator clearly had the authority that he needed to make his decisions. But even if we assume that the EPC contract governed, the waiver clause in the EPC contract itself can be waived. And here we have a situation where BioSAR claimed equitable adjustment from the beginning of the case, from its initial demand. So that by itself should have put Aurora on notice that there were equitable claims being asserted in the arbitration, and that it had a responsibility to object if it wanted to retain its ability to say that those claims were outside of the scope. Then BioSAR, in its statement of claims, included an abandonment argument. So here's another opportunity for Aurora to object. Then we go over a year and a half, including a year of discovery, depositions where abandonment was routinely discussed, a 26-day hearing, hundreds of pages of post-trial briefing, millions of dollars in attorney's fees. Never once did Aurora object to the discussions of abandonment. And maybe the best evidence of all, after the hearing was over, the arbitrator submitted a draft list of issues for decision. Now, the parties made numerous changes to that list of issues for decision, but the one thing that was not changed is the inclusion of abandonment of contract in that list.
So, counsel, this is a powerful, your summary right now is a very powerful statement of waiver by conduct on the part of Aurora. What I'm struggling with, going back to Judge Reyes's question, is with a laser focus on the no waiver clause in the EPC, how do you respond to that? I mean, your first answer was it doesn't matter if we have a stipulation, but I'm not quite sure I follow that. Why would that not matter? And why are you relying at such great length on conduct if you have satisfied, if you, in this record, there is a compliance with the no waiver clause in the EPC?
The first point that I was making with the stipulation is that if the stipulation governs the arbitration between the parties, the scope of the arbitration, then there's no need for a waiver argument because Aurora agreed to arbitrate all claims and defenses, regardless of what else the EPC contract says. So,
but if the EPC contract says it can't be waived unless the waiver is in writing, which I'm paraphrasing, but I think that's somewhat accurate, then where's the signed writing? Are you telling me that's the stipulation? I'm just trying to follow your argument.
Right, and I'm sure I'm not explaining myself as well as I mean to, but the argument is that the stipulation allows or states that all three parties are going to be arbitrating all claims and defenses. So if that is true, and all of these claims and defenses are subject to arbitration, then we never get to the EPC contract's more limited view of what claims are arbitrable. And then by extension, it doesn't matter whether Aurora waived that argument or not, because the stipulation says that everything is arbitrable, and that's the only thing that matters. Now, if we assume that the EPC contract is the source of authority for the arbitrator, then the question of waiver comes more into focus. So that's the distinction that I was trying to make.
Okay, so in other words, you're basically tracking what the district court said when it said that the stipulated and proposed order supplanted the EPC's arbitration provision.
I'm saying that section, to the extent that the stipulation includes broader language than section 14.2, then yes, the stipulation would supersede the EPC contract with respect to those provisions.
So let's assume, just for the sake of argument, that the stipulation is broader than the EPC provisions, including section 14.2, and basically overrides the requirement for there to be a writing in order to waive. How do you get around the Wells Fargo case? Because that clearly lays out a two-prong test, including that second prong.
Well, at bottom, Your Honor, I think that the case law isn't quite as clear as Aurora would suggest. The question at bottom is, was the party sufficiently apprised of the claim or issue such that it could, such that it had the opportunity to object to the, had an opportunity to object to the issue? And as I discussed earlier, Aurora had numerous opportunities to note its objection to the abandonment of contract claim or more generally equitable claims. Of course, BioSAR also would submit that abandonment is not an equitable claim, and that argument is in our briefs. But
and why is it not an equitable claim? It seemed like earlier you referenced equitable claims and you mentioned including abandonment. Why is abandonment not an equitable claim?
BioSAR at all points was attempting to seek monetary relief, and the arbitrator concluded that the parties had changed the duties to each other, and that had restructured their contractual relationships. But at the end of the day, BioSAR was seeking relief. Under the contract, was seeking money damages. Now, the arbitrator concluded that BioSAR didn't prove those damages, but even so, that was BioSAR's aim from the beginning.
While you're on that, counsel, I just want to clarify one part of the record that I'm a little fuzzy on. I understand Biosar was seeking damages from Aurora, but wasn't Biosar also defending against Aurora's claim to either disgorge or return payments that had been made? Am I wrong about that?
Yes, that I believe that was. Yeah, and I'll defer to Mr. Thompson. He'll have a better understanding of the nuances of that argument, but I believe that is correct. I'd like really briefly to turn to the issue of Biosar's attorney's fees. Under Minnesota case law, an arbitrator's decision on who is the prevailing party is virtually unassailable. Here, the arbitrator determined that Biosar was a prevailing party in its dispute vis-a-vis Aurora, and that it was entitled to its fees and costs as a result. Now, the source of that authority comes from the EPC contract, section 14.3, and section 14 contains a survival clause to the extent that the EPC contract is terminated or expired. So as a result, even though the arbitrator concluded that the contract was abandoned, the fee provision of Section 14 survives that decision. And therefore, Biosar is entitled to its fees under the EPC contract.
How is Biosar entitled to its attorney fees if that provision says that, quote, a party not entitled to recover its costs shall not recover attorney fees, and Biosar never recovered its costs?
I'm sorry, which provision are you referring to, Your Honor?
So that is it's the provision on being able to recover attorney fees under the EPC contract. When you were just referring to it with respect to the prevailing party, and it says, I'll quote it again, it says, a party not entitled to recover its costs shall not recover attorney's fees.
Well, the arbitrator determined that Biosar was entitled to recover its costs, and the parties agreed in the stipulation again that the arbitrator would be the final arbitrator of those types of all issues of law and fact. So the arbitrator determined Biosar was the prevailing party, that it was entitled to its costs, and that decision is virtually binding as a matter of fact and law. Your Honors, I'll conclude by quoting another paragraph from the stipulation. Faith, Aurora, and Biosar wish to avoid the delay and uncertainty of appeals and to finally and expeditiously resolve all their claims against each other in one forum. Now, Mr. Jones, at the end of his discussion today, said that Aurora wants a new arbitration, a new hearing, 26 more days of argument, I would assume. And that's exactly against what the parties agreed to. It's exactly against what the Supreme Court has said the purpose of arbitration is, to provide an efficient manner of deciding disputes. And any decision other than affirmance would take away from the party's agreement and from the Supreme Court's favor of arbitration. Biosar would ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for Faith Technologies, you will have 5 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Dean Thompson, and I represent Faith Technologies, Inc. In the brief time I have, I want to emphasize 4 points. The first one is that I agree with Mr. Bintman's arguments, and I would like to dilate on one part of them before moving to my final three. Opposing counsel said that Biosar never sought abandonment in the arbitration. Well, I was there for 26 days, and he was not, and I can assure you that, in fact, they did. And in fact, that is a district court finding, factual finding, that this issue was argued. And that district court finding is due substantial deference by this court. Let me just quote what the court says. The district court quoted the arbitrator finding that Aurora had emphasized throughout the arbitration that neither BioSAR nor Faith had met its exacting burden of proof with respect to any material or modifications or theories of contract abandonment. So clearly, the district court found that the contract abandonment was vigorously argued below. And in fact, there's good reason and basis for that, because as Aurora argued in its brief to the arbitrator, this is quoted on page 41 of our brief, and with a cite to the record, Aurora states in its brief, there is neither a factual nor legal basis for BioSAR's claim of partial abandonment of the EPC contract. That claim should be rejected. So when Mr. Jones said it was never pursued, and therefore they never understood what was going to happen to them, that can't be accurate, because they wouldn't have argued abandonment, the claim should be rejected, if they didn't appreciate it was being presented to the arbitrator. They clearly did. There's a good, we had a careful arbitrator here as well, because before he issued his final award, he asked for the parties to submit all issues that were to be considered to him. Contract abandonment was suggested by the arbitrator as one of those issues. Aurora didn't object. And of course, he had jurisdiction to consider the abandonment issue, because as he himself said in his order, under the part that says parties and jurisdiction, he quotes the tri-party agreement and the order for, that all claims are to be arbitrated, and he finds he has jurisdiction for all claims. And that's cited in the record as addendum 132 to 33. So we agree that he had jurisdiction. We agree that Aurora waived it conspicuously by its conduct. We also address the how can you waive a non-waiver provision, and we cite that in five pages of authority on page 39 through 44 of Faith's brief. Now let me turn to the other three points. First, as you're well aware, there is no restriction on Faith's ability to obtain an award based on equitable relief. We're not bound by the EPC contract at all. And that's important because Faith had independent claims. We weren't an observer of BioSAR's proof. We independently proved our case, and we independently proved that Aurora abandoned the contract. We independently proved that BioSAR abandoned its subcontract with Faith. We were on a chess clock, and for 8.5 days, it's exactly what I did. So we have an independent basis for our award that we're entitled to $20 million. And the only response to this is that somehow our independent claims are inextricably intertwined with BioSAR's. They are not. BioSAR's claims were separate from ours. We may have used the same argument, but we separately proved it. And as proof of
how— But separately proving is different than a different issue than them being intertwined, though.
Well, no, because I don't understand how. Because BioSAR could have just been a witness in the arbitration, and it could have been between Faith and Aurora. And I proved that Aurora waived it, and I proved that BioSAR waived it as a witness, I'm entitled to that award. And I'll continue to show how independent this was, because the arbitrator held in favor of Faith on an alternative ground of promissory estoppel, that Aurora had promised I would take care of Faith and pay them. And based on that promissory estoppel, there was an independent basis for our lien. So I see that I am run out of time, but I'll rely on the briefs for our attorney's fees arguments. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start just by pointing out something that Mr. Binman said that reinforces the argument that I made a few minutes ago. He said that BioSAR at all points was seeking monetary damages. That's exactly right. There was no request for a
rescission or abandonment of the contract, just for monetary damages. Aurora had no notice that anything else was being considered until the arbitrator came down and granted non-monetary damages in direct violation of his.
So Aurora had no clue whatsoever that the abandonment issue was on the table, including when it was taking depositions and asking about abandonment, about during other parts of discovery, when the arbitrator said, here are the list of issues, and abandonment is one of them. There's no objection. So Aurora had no clue whatsoever, is what you're saying?
I'm saying that what was presented, contrary to what was just represented to the court, there was no attempt at the arbitration itself to urge abandonment or rescission. And the trial court, Your Honor, Judge Bradwell was asking where the arbitrator equated rescission and abandonment. And he did so on page RAD 94, which is page 94 of the partial final award, where he said, if one party to an agreement acts in a manner inconsistent with the contract and the other party acquiesces to such conduct, the contract has been abandoned and rescinded. That's.
Is there a finding, though, Judge, Mr. Jones, with regard to this contract and these?
In the findings, he used the word abandoned, but he equated the two earlier on, so I submit that he was making the same finding.
Right, but wasn't he equating the two wasn't he discussing the two when he was talking about case law? And how some courts do equate the two, but in fact that the two are different issues.
He was citing case law, but the language here is not a quote. It is his own words equating
right,
the two.
Right, but he referred to abandonment throughout.
He referred to abandonment, and he referred to rescission repeatedly as well.
Well, he referred to rescission a couple times with respect to abandonment, but throughout he's very, very consistent about referring to this as being an abandonment issue.
I understand, I think that we're quibbling over something that is not important, because either abandonment or rescission are equitable remedies, and that's what's barred by the EPC contract's arbitration clause, and that's our argument here. The other point I wanted to get to was the question of the stipulation. The whole idea that the stipulation governed all the disputes in the arbitration is a fabrication that respondents created only after the arbitration to try to retroactively justify the arbitrator's violation of the bars on equitable and non-monetary relief. Everyone in the arbitration knew that the purpose of the stipulation was to join faith to the already ongoing Biosar Aurora arbitration that was going on under the EPC contract.
Well, that was certainly one of the reasons, one of the key reasons, but that's a different issue than what authority the arbitrator has under the stipulation order.
But nobody, neither Biosar nor Faith, ever argued during the arbitration that the stipulation governed the Aurora-Biosar dispute. And they don't point in their briefs. If it were there, they would point to it. It is not there. They don't point to anything that suggested that. And that's why the arbitrator made the finding that he did, that the dispute between Aurora and Biosar was governed by the arbitration provision of the EPC contract. That was the basis of his finding. He knew, and everybody knew, that there were three different agreements at issue here governing the three different disputes, the triangle that was here. And he identified what each of those controlling agreements was. The district court overruled that decision, which it did not have the power to do. Under the JAMS rules, under the FAA, under Minnesota law, and under the provisions of the contract, the EPC contract itself, the determination of the scope of the arbitration agreement and what disputes fell within it was assigned to the arbitrator. He made that finding, and the district court improperly overruled it. Your Honor, if you have other questions, I'm happy to address them. Otherwise, I ask the court to reverse the district court's judgment and to remand with instructions to vacate the arbitration award. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you all for the oral arguments and the briefing. It was very well done, very extensive as well. And we will be issuing an order within the statutory time frame, 90 days. And we wish all of you safe health and safe travels.